Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 498 for February 26th, 2015. Two quick announcements before I speak with Jack Henderson. Stutter Talk is excited to announce that Dr. Dennis Drana will join us for a special Ask the Expert episode on genetics and stuttering. Dr. Drana is senior investigator at the National Institute on Deafness and Other Communication Disorders at the National Institutes of Health. What do you want to ask Dr. Drana about genetics and stuttering? Email questions to StutterTalk at StutterTalk.com or leave questions at the StutterTalk Facebook group by March 1st at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and we may ask your questions on air. Please limit questions to 50 words or less, and please indicate if you wish to remain anonymous. Stutter Talk hopes to publish this special episode on March 4th. Second announcement, for folks near North Carolina, Friends and the Stuttering Foundation are hosting a one-day conference for children who stutter, parents, and clinicians. If you stutter, you have friends. This one-day conference is Saturday, March 7th, 2015, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Cary, North Carolina. I have attended many of these one-day Friends workshops and will try and attend this one as well. Friends does an amazing job. The keynote presenter is Vivian Siskin, who is well-known and respected for her work in avoidance reduction therapy. A number of Stutter Talk guests, including Ruben Schaff, have praised Ms. Siskin's therapy skills. Other presenters include the amazing Rita Thurman and Lee Casciano. Go to StutterTalk.com, episode 498, where you will see a link to the workshop flyer with directions and details. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 498 for February 2015. I'm your host, Peter Reitzes, here in Carborough, North Carolina. I'm a person who stutters, a speech-language pathologist, starting off with some good voluntary stuttering. Our big topic today is what I wish my speech-language pathologist knew about stuttering. This will be the third episode in this awesome series, if I do say so myself. And my guest today, our guest today is Jack Henderson. Hey, Jack.
How are you, Peter? Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on air. We really appreciate it. And you're a friend of Dr. Ellen Kelly's. You're a colleague of hers, and any friend of Ellen's is a friend of ours. Jack Henderson is a person who stutters and a speech-language pathologist in the Robertson County School District. He is co-director alongside of Dr. Ellen Kelly of Vanderbilt's Bill Wilkerson Center's Summer Camp for Children Who Stutter. Jack resides in Nashville, Tennessee, where he is joining us from today. So, Jack, what are your first thoughts on this topic of what I wish my school SLP knew about stuttering? If your former speech therapist was on the line right now, what would you tell her?
Well, it's a very interesting topic. My first thought, I have to, of course, preface with, I went all of my school years, I went to a small private school, and there was no school-based SLP. However, I saw over the course of my life three different speech-language pathologists in a small private practice. However, they were all generalists in the sense that they saw, I think, a wide range of pediatric and adolescent speech and language cases. So none of them were specialists in fluency. However, I had a mixed bag of experience. To your question of if they were sitting here right now, I don't know what I would say to them. I don't think I would admonish them for anything that they might have done wrong. I think they were doing the best they could and the best they thought. You used my comment in an earlier episode, and I commented on that question of what did you wish they knew. And I think to that effect, one thing I remember from my first two SLPs, I actually had a wonderful experience with the SLP I saw when I was in high school. But when I was a child, my memory of those therapy sessions is pretty much of just us rehearsing and practicing as you would with a child with an articulation disorder. So we were looking at certain sounds, kind of tagging certain sounds that I had problems on. So when I was a child, I stuttered a lot on W words and L's and S's and M's. I still stutter a lot on M's nowadays.
Me too. W's and M's, man.
I don't know what it was. Yeah. And it's funny. One of the things that I did as a way of getting out of it, that I talk about nowadays, and I still sometimes catch myself doing it, is instead of saying why as a kid, I learned to say how come instead.
For me, I don't know how much I can zero in on it, but I was from Wilmington, Delaware, or I am from Wilmington, and W's were really hard for me, possibly because I always had to say Wilmington or Delaware. I'd get stuck on the D, and then I wonder, well, were M's hard because an M looks like an upside down W? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it's chronological thing, you know, if it's just because it's more complicated to do motorically, and it's that, I have no idea. And I don't know also if it's this self-fulfilling cycle, if you tag these words. I mean, really, I stutter on all sorts of words, but I think some things stand out, so then you say, oh, these are my problem words, and then of course when those come up, you worry about them, and then it just becomes this kind of self-defeating cycle. I remember practicing words, practicing the techniques, easy onsets and prolongations and stuff. When we were rereading aloud, we'd highlight certain words and I'd do them on purpose there. And then I'd get a sheet to take home to practice, which of course I never did. I never wanted to practice at home because that would kind of make my stutter real. I didn't want to have to deal with it at home. That was just for my hour a week or 2 hours a week of speech therapy that I went to after school.
Yeah. I mean, so it sounds like you're saying, I'm getting a vibe that you never really felt that going to speech therapy would help you. Is that fair to say?
That's an interesting way to phrase that question. I don't know if I ever thought explicitly that it wasn't going to help me. I think I thought that I needed to go because I stuttered. I understood that I stuttered. I wasn't comfortable with the fact that I stuttered. I never liked talking about it to anybody. I think it was just a fact of life that, okay, because I have this, therefore I must go to speech therapy. I don't know if it was ever, I would go to summer camp in the summer and then I'd come back and I'd stutter a lot because I'd be really excited or whatever. And then we'd go back into speech therapy. And so my relationship with speech therapy as a kid was always kind of with the ebbs and flows that everyone has with their stutter. When it would get more pronounced, then it would be like, oh, we need to work on it more. And then when it would go away, be like, oh, it's getting better. And it was just this kind of a thing that I had, that I did.
What an awful thing to be rewarded for the variability of stuttering.
I know, right? This is something that I now try and instill on all my kids, not just my kids who stutter, on my caseload of kind of, I keep asking them and I keep reinforcing why they're with me, because I think no one's ever told them that before.
I was just going to ask you about that. So keep going with that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's something that I try and work on, and I'm going to keep reinforcing. I have a group of two kids that stutter that I work with weekly that I'm really trying to do different things with. I think that's something that I realized last year. I did my CF last year,
And that's your clinical fellowship year.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. My clinical fellowship year, my first year in the public schools, and it was, you know, as a school-based SLP, like, you know, it's a whirlwind and it's a lot of things to get used to when you're first starting out. So I just kind of hit the ground running. But then after about a month or two, I was like, these kids have been being pulled out probably for most of their school career. And I bet no one's ever asked them why they're having to leave class. And I asked them and they were like, to learn. And I was like, to learn what? And they just didn't have an answer for me. And that kind of hit a light bulb in my head that I feel like a lot of the time you're a passive, a lot of kids who stutter, I bet, are kind of passive in the sense of, okay, now you have speech therapy. You know, their parent or their teacher refers them to me or to the other SLP, and then they get pulled out and do some tests that they don't know what it is. And then all of a sudden they start seeing this person, and someone might have told them they stutter, but they don't really know what that is. And so I wish that my school, to answer your question, to go back to the original question, I think I wish that my SLP when I worked with when I was in school age, and I say that like elementary to middle school, younger, had really taken the time, and she might have, and I might have just totally forgotten this, but really instilled, this is what stuttering is. This is why we're doing what we're doing. Are you okay with that? What do you want to work on? I feel like my speech therapist never overtly discussed with me, and this is in my memory, what my options were and what communication as a whole was versus just working on getting rid of your stutter.
Yeah, those are great points. And as I do these shows, I'm thinking of all the good things my guests are saying that I need to be doing even more of, because I think exactly. I'm doing it. But what you're saying, yes, you can always do more of that. And Sarah McIntyre said at one point, I wish my speech therapist had said to me, it's not your fault. And it's exactly. like, I know this, and I think I say it to my students, but I need to be doing it even more.
Exactly. And that was the thing that I never really would practice my quote unquote techniques or whatever, you know, the sheet of L words or W words that I was given. I would just stick it on my, you know, desk in my bedroom and not really want to work on it because I didn't want to face it. And then when I would stutter more, there would be this kind of guilt of, you know, it would be like you're in school and you didn't do your reading and you didn't do well on the quiz. But for me, it's my stutter. And so it's almost like it's your fault. Why didn't you work on it more? And I never got the reinforcement of, well, this is something that you do, and it's not your fault that you stutter. So yeah, that was something that I wish that I had had more of just conversations about stuttering in itself. I feel like as an SLP, you want to really get down and working on stuff, and I think you might sometimes think that, and I feel the same way, you feel like, well, I have a limited time with these kids. I want to hit my goals, whatever they might be. And sitting and just talking about stuttering or just talking about anything and building a relationship feels like I'm wasting time, when really, of course, it isn't. It's the most important thing you could be doing. It's building the positive relationship. But I feel like some SLPs might feel like they're wasting time just doing that, and they want to just get down into it, yeah. when really I think they're jumping over one of the most important parts.
So now, you haven't heard this yet because it hasn't been published yet, but the second episode in this series is with Alana Kahan, and we basically say the same thing, and we do say the same thing, and I bring up this idea of letting therapy happen. You throw a frisbee with a child, and I don't know how many speech language pathologists view that as important, but as you said, building relationships and letting the child have the space to come to you with what they want to work on.
Exactly, exactly. And that's something that I catch myself even doing. I mean, I need to work on practicing what I preach. Yeah. You know, I have this group of these two kids who stutter, and I want to get down to talking about our speech or talking about how we feel about it or working on cancellations or whatever it may be that in my head would be great to work on, but I need to meet them where they are first. I can't expect them to be ready to go. So recently I took a step back. I said, okay, let's get up off this table and let's toss this ball around and just say things about each other. Let's get to know each other, because I feel like you guys don't know each other and I want to get to know you guys better. And so we just started doing that to begin and end every session. And I'm going to keep doing that.
Oh, I used to do that years ago, and you know, I need to get a couple more balls and do that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to this wonderful talk about counseling with people who stutter at ASHA, and Joe Donaher was talking about kind of steps. So first, just talk to them about whatever they want to talk about, then talk to them about stuttering, then talk to them about their stuttering. You know, if we jump in and just talk to them about their stuttering, it's like you're skipping a lot of steps and they don't really feel comfortable with you, because stuttering is such a very personal thing for everybody. I know it is for me, and it was when I was a kid, because it's something that it's really hard to express how it feels like. And if someone is all of a sudden talking to you and asking you questions about your stutter, but you're not really comfortable with them yet and willing to talk to them about anything else, why would you expect them to talk to you about something that's so personal to them?
Yeah, Joe Donaher is an awesome dude. And
he really is.
Yeah, and he had an articulation issue growing up. And the way he talks about it, I get the sense that it's helped him understand this work from the client's perspective. And he said to me, I can't quote him now, many years ago, he said some version of perhaps more important than speech therapy is just getting kids who stutter together to learn from one another.
Exactly. And that's something I did. I kind of jumbled around my schedule this year to get two of my kids who stutter together. One's a second grader, one's a first grader. And I had to really convince one teacher to let me pull him in another time of the day when normally I wouldn't have. But I'm like, this is really important. I need to get these two kids together in a room. And I think it's been valuable. I think it's still kind of, we're still kind of getting used to each other and getting used to what the group is. But I think it's going to be helpful for them.
Yeah, for folks who don't work in a public school, and congratulations on that. That's so important. And for folks you know, who don't do this work, scheduling is such a beast.
It's really crazy. Yeah. And it's just a mess.
Yeah, and I always love the teachers who are flexible.
Me too.
Those are the best. This is Stutter Talk. Peter Wright is here with Jack Henderson, who is a person who stutters, a speech language pathologist, and with Dr. Ellen Kelly, runs the Vanderbilt Bill Wilkerson Center summer camp for children who stutter in Tennessee. So you were mentioning this idea of passive speech therapy. So I'm going to just throw a lot of thoughts into one. I'm going to try to make it cohesive. But
yeah,
if you heard the episodes with the Did I Stutter crew at on Stutter
Talk. I heard the first one. I haven't had a chance to listen to the second one about hospitality yet, but I'm really looking for, but I'm really looking forward to that one. I have a small blog myself, and they've reposted some of my stuff, and I've reposted some of theirs. I think they're a really interesting group.
I know you had a blog, and I did not know that you guys had that relationship. So that's
awesome. I'm not good at blogging yet. I'm still getting used to it. Like, I'll blog a few posts in like a few days, and then I won't touch it for a month, and then I'll go back on it. It's something that I have. I still need to work out the rhythm of it. I think I'm very much in agreement with you. I think some of their things, I disagree with some of the things they say, but I think what their value is that they really challenge my outlook and my biases.
I 100% I agree with what you just said.
So they're such an important voice.
Yeah, they are an important voice, but they're an important voice that on some core issues we just very much disagree upon. But on many other issues, I think there's a lot of common ground.
Yeah. And they've really opened my eyes to things about how teachers and other school SLPs and just a lot of how people perceive stuttering, the kind of small little things. Like I have one child who stutters very severely. And I had a teacher approach me in the hallway and go, "Hey, do you work with this kid?" I go, "Yeah." They go, "Oh, good. Oh, cuz." And she just started shaking her head and looking at me like, and in my head, I'm like, oh, you know, that it just kind of almost broke my heart because it made hit. They were obviously seeing him struggle and being like, at one hand, they want him to get help. But they also they kind of equated that with like, "Oh, this is bad. This is really bad." And so it just kind of made me think about it.
And it goes back to like, you know, if this was easy, don't you think we would, you know, we would have solved these issues by now? I mean,
exactly.
Like, everyone just thinks it's easy. And yeah, if it were easy, no one would be stuttering anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, the reason I brought up the Did I Stutter folks, mm-hmm. And I said a moment ago that we might disagree on a lot of core issues or some. I'm not even sure how many.
I don't know.
Think of one, the informed consent thing that we really disagreed upon. But I think there's mostly common ground, whether they would agree with that or not, because I'm not sure at this point. But one of the things they say is it's okay to stutter full stop. And I know that they say that they support individuals who stutter who want speech therapy, but you know, I do get a very anti-therapy, anti-speech therapy view coming from them, and hearing that, I have to really reflect upon what I want for speech therapy, and what I want is just what you were saying, not passive speech therapy, but engaged, but
exactly,
empowered speech therapy. And at some point, I don't know what that point is, at some point, you're really asking permission from the child. Is it all right if we keep taking you for speech therapy?
Of course.
Which is really tough because are you going to – so let's say you have a seventh grader who's two or three reading levels delayed.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to ask that child if it's okay to work with them in a small group to help them get back on within normal limits or at grade level? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not so sure that's okay, but with stuttering, I think at some point the child – can say, "I don't want to do this right now," or "now I'm ready," or you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. I know what you mean. It's a really interesting, it's a difficult line to draw of where is something that we are say, we know better and we're going to help you on this. And where is something that we can say, is this something you're comfortable with working on? And if you don't want to, then that's okay. I think that's a difficult line to draw. I have the same issue a lot. I sometimes wish I could build in, I mean, maybe I could, and someone's telling me I've been doing IEPs wrong the past few years, but some sort of flexibility where, you know, we have a few weeks on, a few weeks off, or some sort of flexibility with my kids who stutter so that it's not this regimented, written in stone thing of like, I have to keep on taking them. It's just, yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah, I mean, I just exited a preschooler who was stuttering 9 months ago,
mm-hmm.
but, and I, she probably is still stuttering a little, but it's so much, because I'm not going to sit here and say that she never stutters, but the parents feel that she no longer needs speech therapy. The parents also feel confident in their ability to help her if she were to have more stuttering. But what happens if she starts stuttering in 2 months? Well, her IEP's gone, you know.
Exactly.
But do I want to? But you know, then you get kids in the public schools who I get an IEP for a fifth grader who just transferred from another school, and they haven't stuttered in 4 years. But every year the IEP is renewed.
Just because, keeps getting renewed.
Yeah, because somebody is worried that they might start stuttering again. And it's, well, gee, they haven't been stuttering for 3.5 years. How long are we going to keep renewing this paperwork?
Exactly. And then it's like, well, do we just keep him on consultation just so he's on our radar? But then it's like, well, why don't you just take him off the IEP and then just check in on him? If he starts stuttering again, then we can cross that bridge. Like, it doesn't take that long for a speech only IEP, it doesn't take that long to get the whole thing started again. Like, you don't have to have weeks and weeks of data, you know, just.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There's so much red tape and paper.
There really is.
Yeah. So I want to read to you something from the Stutter Talk Facebook group. So Tracy Salt wrote, the reason I'm fluent in your office. Oh, so she wrote, so I posted about this topic of what I wish my SLP knew about stuttering. So here's Tracy's response. The reason I'm fluent in your office isn't because your techniques have been successful. It's because I'm in a controlled environment. Want to help me? Put me in real life situations. Thoughts on that?
I think that's exactly correct. That's something that I struggle with a lot of my kids, not just stuttering, but with pragmatics or a lot of different things. I think it's difficult for a school-based SLP to really work with that because you have such a huge caseload, A, and B, you just want to get these. It's difficult, but I completely agree. And I think we need to get more creative about how we view therapy for kids who stutter within the schools or then just for school-aged kids. I think we need to get more creative about how we view our therapy. What does therapy mean? What does it look like? Does it just look like sitting in a room with a few kids or just one-on-one? Or does it look like giving them tasks to do and following up every month about certain things? You know, what does it look like? It might not involve the kid at all, but only indirectly. You really be educating the teachers and educating the parents about things. Yeah, I think we need to get more creative about what stuttering therapy looks like.
Now, you've been in the schools for how many years now?
This is my second year.
So I've been in the schools full time for about 15 years now, and it seems that every IEP or almost every IEP I get for a child who stutters only has fluency goals on it. It is so very rare that I see an IEP for an elementary age child who stutters with any other goal, unless I write it. Because
exactly,
because yeah,
yeah, yeah. But to say they have fluency goals until I get on the IEP.
and my new thing is to try to put the speech tools last, so that when you're at a meeting and you're talking, and like I don't think I've ever written an IEP without any speech control tools, because I think it's a piece of the pie.
Exactly.
But it's just one piece, and it might not be the most important piece or one of the top three.
Exactly.
Please go ahead.
You had that wonderful episode on here a few months ago, I think, about that classic quote-unquote goal, the 80% fluency.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank
that
you.
I love that episode, and I mentioned it in a meeting with all the other SLPs in my county a few weeks ago. And one looked at me earnestly and said, is that not a good goal?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, let's think about that. Yeah. If we're saying 80% fluency, then that means we want 20% disfluency. I mean, that's a lot for anybody. I mean, that's a lot. So are we – like if we want to reduce stuttering, A, if that's our goal – not saying it necessarily should be, but is that if that's our goal, saying 80% fluent is not a very good way of writing that.
Yeah. Now, was this the episode with Nina Reeves, or was this a different episode?
It was a different episode.
God, I can't, because this is one of the things I've been talking about a lot recently. So I don't remember if I've said this on air or just in one of my presentations, but you know, if you ask a speech language pathologist, if you say to her, so what if your husband comes home and says to you, I love you so much, but I've been cheating on you, but I want you to know I've been in therapy for this cheating and I've reduced my infidelity by 80%.
I think we love 80%.
Yeah.
But we love 80% across the board. I don't know if it's not just stuttering or our tick or language. We just love putting 80%.
But
I don't know what it is about 80% that makes it seem so good.
Yeah. But then the speech therapist, you know, like they laugh and she's like, well, yeah, it means he's cheating 20% of the time. Exactly. Or, you know, it's like, and if you ask a parent, like I'll never forget, I believe it was the first therapy session I ever observed when I was just a stutterer getting my own speech therapy. My speech therapist invited me to observe with him. And so a family comes in and they're still standing up and they're still shaking the speech therapist's hand. Mm-hmm. And the mother pretty much blurts out, will my daughter ever get a husband? And the daughter is playing on the ground and she's 2 years old. 2 or 3 years old. And that's a real fear.
Oh, yeah.
And so this mom doesn't care if the child's stuttering 20% or 5%. She cares the child's stuttering.
Exactly.
But I'm sorry to have yanked the microphone out of your hand there. So you also see this 80%
fluency? I've seen it, yes. I've seen it. And you know, we'll speak fluently or we'll use fluent speech for 80% accuracy, which doesn't even make sense syntactically.
Yeah. And most kids aren't stuttering that much anyway.
No, not at all.
So, please.
You know, and so that's a goal that I mean, I try to rework my stuttering goals for kind of two things. One, like I work on reducing avoidance behaviors or, you know, speaking in certain situations. I also work on identifying like stuttering versus non-stuttering. So we're really like increasing awareness. Those, I think, are the two things that I tend to write on there. And from that, then we can work on fluency shaping or stuttering modification or any other types of goals.
And I'm starting to also write that whatever goal it is, if it's a speech tool goal or if it's avoidance goal or learning about stuttering goal, the student will choose. You know, the student will choose to.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So like we'll research myths about stuttering. The student will choose to write a paragraph about two myths. The child will choose to one successful person who stutters to research. The child will choose one speech tool to practice for 2 minutes or whatever it is.
But I love that.
Putting choice in.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Have you been able to chip away at all at this 80% nonsense?
I have in some respects. I've talked to other SLPs in my county about it. They've come to me about questions or concerns they had about goal writing. Even though I've only been working for a few years, as a person who stutters and someone who, when I was in undergrad and in grad school, worked with people at Vanderbilt in their stuttering lab, and I'm very interested in it, they've already, and because most SLPs are so uncomfortable with stuttering, they've already started coming to me being like, what should I do? And I still feel really uncomfortable just telling them, you need to do this or this, or you shouldn't do this. But that's something that I've definitely questioned them. It's like, okay, so what are your goals for this kid? Like, what do you want to get out of it? Yeah. Are you just looking to decrease stuttering? Are you looking to, what do you want to come out of this? And that's something I think are kind of the bigger picture questions that I ask school SLPs when I talk to them who are very uncomfortable with stuttering. It's like, you know, what do you want? What do you think? Or what do you and the family think? So what does the kid want to come out of this? Like, is it just to eliminate their stuttering, or like, what do you want to see?
It's still almost like speech therapy is the Wild West where
it really is.
Yeah. It's like, this is your second year. And when you were hired and when you just started right out of grad school, mm-hmm. you were probably already considered the stuttering expert in your district.
Which is both flattering and also really worrying.
And I say this because this is the same thing happened to me. And, you know, if nobody else wants the throne, it doesn't take much to capture that throne.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'm happy to, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know as much as they might think. I don't know.
I don't think anybody knows as much as we would. I mean, stuttering is so hard.
It really is.
Which is one of the reasons why sometimes I will meet speech language pathologists who don't know much about stuttering, but they are good therapists and they know that they need to sit down and just hang out and talk with their kids who stutter.
Exactly.
And I see a lot of good stuff happening with people with fairly limited knowledge about stuttering.
Exactly. And I think that what you said is that they're good therapists, where they're good. And I think one of the, one of the big things that is what makes stuttering, especially for school SLPs, so challenging and so scary, is that it kind of rocks the paradigm of what they do day to day. So you have Artic, you have a lot of kids where they come to you, you work on their goals, and then you know what to work on. Like, you have a system of things to work on, you have a ladder to climb up, you have X, Y, and Z boxes to fill. And then you have kids who stutter, and they kind of challenge that. There isn't just like a few techniques. Okay, hi, you stutter. I'm your therapist. Let's get to work on these things, and then we'll be able to do this, and then we'll build up to this, and then we'll say see you later. It challenges them to actually really take a step back and look at this whole child and see what's going on and really get to know them. And I think some really good therapists still do this. I'm not saying that all school SLPs don't, but I think it's very different from everything else they work on.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Our guest today is Jack Henderson, a person who stutters and a speech-language pathologist in Nashville, Tennessee. We were talking off air, and you really liked a comment we made in a recent episode with Sarah McIntyre about sanitizing stuttering. Can you talk about that?
Exactly. I loved this is something that I've noticed throughout my life, both personally and professionally, and that I've noticed about stuttering is that there's such this taboo around the term. Like, it's like a dirty word. Like, we don't want to say we stutter, or people are afraid to call it stuttering. I love what Sarah said. People just call it fluency. Or, I have a fluency kid. Well, that kind of just, sanitizes it. What I called it on my blog a few months ago by calling stutter a stutter is, I'm a Harry Potter fan, and I call it the Voldemortification of stuttering. You know, like in Harry Potter, they can't say his name. He must not be named. And it's kind of the same thing with stuttering. Let's just call it what it is. It's stuttering, and that's not a bad word. It's just what it is. Yeah. And so I say to my kids over and over again, like, I stutter, you stutter, we stutter. Let's just call it what it is. You know, we can call it bumpy speech. We can call it sloppy. Well, I wouldn't say sloppy. That's too negative. We would call it bumpy speech. We'd say smooth speech, but let's call it stuttering, because that's what it is. And I remember when I was a kid, I was so afraid to say the word stuttering. To even mention my stutter would fill me with anxiety. And I think now I'm really conscious about that as a therapist, to really just kind of take that taboo off. We stutter. Let's just call it. Let's say it about ourselves. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. And the sooner we can say that about ourselves, I think it has such a positive and powerful impact.
Yeah, reclaiming stuttering.
Exactly, exactly. And I really want them to try and do that. It's something that I realized quickly, you can't give to the children. Like, they have to be able to reclaim it and discover it themselves. I think someone who's been, has had a long journey with their stuttering, and now, like myself, is at a very, very positive place with their stutter, you kind of want to project that onto your kid and say, look where I am. Can't you be there now? You're 8, right? But you have to kind of let them go on that journey themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a difficult thing as the therapist, because you want them to, you have to understand that this is something they're going to have to live with their whole life, and you have to give them the tools to be able to develop that relationship with their stutter, but you can't make it for them.
Yeah, and let me leave you with one last thought and question, because I want to get your comment on this. I find myself saying all the time to families, to people who, well, really to families, to try to help them understand stuttering, that stuttering is really an adult problem that kids get, meaning that it doesn't really matter what we want for them. It's what they're ready for. And it's so hard for adults to face our stuttering. And here we are expecting second graders who have been stuttering for, 4 or 5 years, to embrace treatment and embrace getting better, whatever getting better means. And it's almost like, how dare we expect an 8-year-old, a 7-year-old to want to tackle this adult problem? What do you think about that?
I think that's really on point. I really like that. That's something actually is part of the reason why I'm starting in my county a parent group for parents of kids who stutter.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to start it next month in early March before our spring break to get parents from all over the county to kind of get together and talk to each other, talk to me, ask me questions, just hear each other's stories, because I think it's such an isolating thing. But I think that would be good for their perspective of what is stuttering. And because, like you said, it's such an adult problem in the sense that it's both something that adults like deal with in a different way and that we expect kids to deal with it, which really it's not realistic. But also I think adults sometimes can project these, make it more of an issue than it can be for some kids. So I think a lot of the therapy for stuttering needs to go on, needs to work with parents. There's so much that needs to work with parents. I think that's a struggle for being a school SLP, especially where I work in a very low-income area, to get parents to have them be able to have the time, because they're maybe working three jobs, to come and work with you and talk about goals and stuff, because it's difficult to get parents involved or have them be able to find the time to work with you.
And just getting parents involved can be so important in
exactly.
So many different ways. So many,
and it's
ways.
Something that I struggle with when I'm doing this. I'm going to really, really work on this mentally, is that I'm not a parent. And so I feel so awkward when I'm giving parents yeah. advice about talking to their kids. Cause I'm like, who am I to tell you how to interact with your child?
Here's my thing on that. Cause I was not a parent for a long time. And uh-huh. I've been a parent now for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I still say this, I'm not giving you parenting advice. I'm giving you advice that will hopefully help with your child's stuttering.
Okay.
And I find
that's
that
a good way to look at it.
Yeah, I find that to be important because sometimes it can sound like parenting advice, but it's really not meant that way. It's advice, especially with preschoolers. It's not parenting advice. It's advice to reduce stuttering, to hopefully help the child recover. And with older kids, it's advice to help them live fully in face of a stutter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I really like how you put that. That's something that I'm going to keep working on.
I love your enthusiasm. And when I first started my first year, I started a support group in my public school for kids who stutter. And I remember asking my principal if I could have a room after school once or twice a month to do this. And the first thing he said was, I'm not paying you extra. You know, and it's like, well, and I think that's some of the most important work I've ever done. And of course,
exactly.
You know, of course, you're not going to get paid for the important stuff.
No. I even said immediately, I asked the head of the special ed person if it's something that I could do, if there's any issues or things I need to fill out confidentiality-wise or whatever. And I was like, I don't expect to be paid extra for this. This is part of my job.
Yeah.
You know, I see it as an extension of my job as a school SLP. So it's not like I'm doing anything extra. I'm doing what I should be doing.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. But then I had kids, and what you want to do is not always what you can do.
Of course. Of course. I totally get that.
Because I'm the first one out of school every day because I have to go pick up my own babies.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Jack Henderson, I want to thank you so much for coming on air. And I do hope you come back and talk shop with us again.
I would absolutely love to. Thank you so much, Peter, for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Thank you.